Hello, my name is Molly, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring vegan music, news, events, and interviews about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting a paradigm of freedom, justice, peace, liberation, health, wellness, and sustainability. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this station nor its management. Vegan Nation has been on air since 2015. Much thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. Throughout this program, we'll be hearing the music of Vegan Queen V. I'm thrilled and honored that we are joined by John Sanborn Matsu. He's joining us for an in-studio interview. John Sanborn Matsu is the vegan author of The Omnivore's Deception. What we get wrong about meat, animals, and ourselves. John Sanborn Matsu is also a professor of philosophy at Worcester Polytechnic Institute here in Massachusetts. Soon, John will be joining us for this in-studio interview. The song we just heard is from Vegan Queen V from her album, In Dog We Trust. I Love You So Much. Recorded at Black Bay Studio on the Isle of Lewis in Scotland.
We have a dream. It's our planet and it's due. We have a dream. It's our planet and it's due. All we want, it's our planet and it's due.
Welcome, John. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
I'm delighted to be here, Marlene. Thanks for having me.
We are joined by John Sanborn Matsu, a professor of philosophy at WPI, Worcester Polytechnic Institute, here in Worcester, Massachusetts. And he is the author of The Omnivore's Deception, What We Get Wrong About Meat, Animals, and Ourselves. And John Sanborn Matsu is also speaking at the upcoming New England Veg Fest, and that's being held Sunday, April 26th, 2026, at Worcester State University. The title of John's presentation is The Omnivore's Deception, Veganism in Defense of Terrestrial Life. And John, before we start talking about your fantastic book, The Omnivore's Deception, can you please tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I'm from Massachusetts. I grew up in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and I went to school. I went to college out in Western Mass at Hampshire College. And then, you know, I had through various peregrinations in Chicago area and California, where I did my PhD, kind of wended my way back here. So this is where I am. And I've been teaching at WPI for, I think, around 23 years or more. And yeah, that's kind of my background, sort of. And at WPI, I teach a variety of courses, including ethics and political philosophy, philosophy of film, philosophy of existentialism and phenomenology. And my you know, main area is really social, what's called social theory, which is critique of the institutions and norms in society that keep us oppressed, keep us from understanding the terms of our own existence, really.
And I find it fascinating on your website, johnsanbonmatsu.com, that has comprehensive information about your other books and articles and things like that. So thanks.
Yes, thanks for that plug.
Thanks. And let's hear about The Omnivore's Deception.
Well, this is a book that I began writing maybe 10 or 12 years ago. Can't remember exactly when. So it took a long time. It's not my first book, but it was one that was hard to write for a variety of reasons. For one thing, it's the summation of my professional life as an ethicist concerned with how we treat other beings on the earth. So I had a lot to say in, you know, fairly limited space. But also I think it was hard to write just emotionally, because what we do to the other beings of our planet is just, it's indescribable. I mean, unless you kind of go through that looking glass, as it were, of animal justice, you don't really know what's happening every minute of the day. It's all hidden from view, right? So trying to encompass something of that system, this global system for destroying, for exterminating other beings, it was a lot to handle, and then to kind of figure out a kind of rhetorical strategy to reach the reader, like to not to be too preachy, but also not to pull punches. This book, as I say in the introduction, there's a lot that's really disturbing in my book, as well as things that are hopeful. One of the things I do in the book is I link the ecological collapse, which we're seeing at the planetary level, and that is tied to the animal food system, which is the most ecologically damaging system on the earth. And people do not understand this at all. They don't understand that they're implicated in a system of injustice, which I describe in my book as the greatest injustice ever on this planet.
And I also value and appreciate your work because you take it to the core of ethics and justice. And so many times I see that even if there is any animal consciousness brought up in a conversation, which is very hard to do across all spectrums of society, that a focus will always turn to, oh, the problem is factory farming, which I don't believe. I believe the problem is itself animal exploitation. Could you address that, please?
Yeah, that is, I'm so glad you said that, Marlene. It's been incredibly damaging to animal interests and to the movement for animal advocacy that the mainstream animal welfare organizations have concentrated on, quote, factory farming. Well, quote, factory farming or industrialized animal agriculture only gets underway in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, whereas there's been ethical critique of our domination, cruelty, and killing of animals for 3,000 years. Even in the 10th century, in what's now Basra, Iraq, there was a group of Islamic scholars who compared what we do to other animals to slavery. Henry Salt, a 19th century reformer, wrote a book called Animals' Rights in 1897 or 1892, I'm forgetting which, but in the late 19th century. And of course, Charles Darwin in Descent of Man in 1871 denied that humans were qualitatively different from other animals. That was what was so controversial, right, about his theory of natural selection. It's the idea that there's a continuity of consciousness, experience, emotions between Homo sapiens and all the other animals on the earth, right? So anyway, to focus on industrialized animal agriculture is simply, it's misdirection. I'm a magician in my spare time, by the way. And, you know, that's a way of misleading the public about what the core of the problem is. Leo Tolstoy, you know, who wrote War and Peace, the great Russian anarchistic Christian social reformer, and wrote about the horrific slaughterhouses at his time, before there was such a thing as factory farming. So yes, I'm glad that you're talking about that, because people have this idea that we can continue to exploit and kill animals in a kind, humane, compassionate, sustainable way. And that's all just not true, as I explain at great length in my book. So it's really important to dispense with the humane myth and to refocus attention on the issue, which is how we treat other animals in a structure of domination and violence. That's the issue. It is not how the animals are being killed mm-hmm. or raised. It's the very fact that we impose our will on them violently. Right. And there's always violence in every relation of animal agriculture and fishing. Mm-hmm. Always.
Mm-hmm. And I find it very ironic that there's such a large crowd who are advocating for the quote-unquote humane, or this back to the natural way, or that they're all into freedom for humans, which to me, we're never going to have freedom, because we can't expect freedom when we're enslaving others.
Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, yeah. As Martin Luther King Jr., you know, very famously said. You're absolutely right. Freedom, liberation has to be of a kind of whole cloth, or at phrase. It's not, and we're seeing this today in the rollback of basic human and civil rights in our own country and around the world as fascist forces consolidate. It's not an accident that the same people who are for taking away the right of women even to vote, which is actually a movement now to overturn suffrage, are the same people who are spreading white supremacist memes on the internet, and the same people who are promoting the manosphere, which is this regressive, toxic, masculine horror show that's centered in many cases around eating animals, right? Eating is a sign not only of your own, of your masculine virility, but of national strength, right? So these issues are all tied together. And unfortunately, the left, political left, is completely clueless about animal issues. And in fact, as speciesist as anybody on the right about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the animal movement has made a little headway in that direction, but not very much.
Yes. Yeah, can you address that, this whole locavore movement?
From the start, the locavores really emphasized animal exploitation at the heart of their project.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, going to the local farmer's market, joining a CSA, and so forth. These were supposed acts of individual rebellion against corporate agriculture. In fact, they did nothing to challenge or change corporate agriculture. It just created new niche markets in food products. And again, I'm not against local consumption as such. It just is not going to dislodge these structures of power, and particularly with our exploitation and killing of other animals. It's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Historically and up to the present, most of the folks who exploit and harm animals or get off on that are men. Still the case, men control the egg, meat, dairy industry, the fishing industry. It's still the case, most hunters, most fishers are men. I mean, millions of men go out of their way in this country and other countries to go off into nature to enact extreme violence on other animals. So this phenomenon of women taking up the knife and the gun and the cattle prod and so forth, that's new. Everyone here on this broadcast, I'm sure, has heard of Temple Grandin, for example. Temple Grandin is the grand dame of animal exploitation, and she has devoted her entire life as a professional, so-called animal behaviorist working for industrialized agriculture, to design techniques, slaughterhouses, kill shoots, to deceive animals into thinking they're safe before they're killed. The reason being, supposedly out of welfare concerns, but also because that creates inefficiencies in the killing mechanism, in the extermination system. If animals get spooked, if they begin to feel terrorized, you know, then their adrenaline is rushing, and it might affect the quality of the meat and so forth. And as I talk about this in my book, Grandin is actually the biggest advocate for using gas chambers on animals. And that literally is happening. It's happening on organic farms, too, where they put, say, 100 chickens, 200 chickens into this CO2 chamber, and they suffer horribly. Also, Grandin supports using gas chambers on pigs, who are just as intelligent, as emotionally sensitive, as capable of, having a loving relation as dogs, right? So that's Temple Grandin, and yet it's not... The point isn't to vilify any one individual. It's just to point out that she has been made a hero by our culture. There's a whole biopic with Claire Danes starring as her. It's called Temple. I think it was the Museum of Modern Art in New York that referred to one of her kill shoot designs as an example of beauty. And in that same description, they called Temple Grandin an animal rights activist. So here's somebody whose entire life is spent speeding animals to their doom, who in the bizarre culture that we live in is seen as an animal rights activist.
We're listening to John Sanbon Matsu, the author of The Omnivore's Deception, What We Get Wrong About Meat, Animals, and Ourselves. John is also a professor of philosophy at Worcester Polytechnic Institute here in Massachusetts, and I'm greatly honored that John is joining us for an in-studio interview. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with John Sanban Matsu. This is Dominion by the Animal Rights Choir. The Animal Rights Choir is a group of international vegan activists, and the choir is facilitated by Vegan Queen V. Welcome back from the break. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene in Massachusetts. We're joined for an in-studio interview with John Sanban Matsu, the author of The Omnivore's Deception, What We Get Wrong About Meat, Animals, and Ourselves. Thanks again, John, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
I'm so glad to be here, and I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you, John. John, how long have you been a vegan?
This year, 2026, 40 years.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm very curious that the topic of veganism and animal liberation is silenced, ignored, dismissed, or censored in every facet that I find in society, whether we're talking about libraries or education, religion, etc. And as vegans, we know the horror, the violence that you just described, the violence that is going on in all the animal exploitation industries, the dairy, the egg, the flesh, the vivisection, etc. It's so shockingly horrible. And yet, this conversation, again, is suppressed.
There's no question, and we know this from the history of human civilization, there's no question that systems of power, domination, and injustice can perpetuate, reproduce themselves, be reinforced for centuries and even millennia without anyone even realizing that there's a problem. I mean, that was true particularly of slavery as an institution in ancient Egypt, in ancient Greece. And those relations were naturalized, by which I mean to say slavery was simply seen as a relation of nature. Nature is a hierarchy. Some are meant to dominate others. The weak are meant to be used and dominated by the strong. We're seeing this now coming out of the mouth of our Department of War chief, Pete Hegseth, but that's an old idea that might makes right. The powerful take what they can, the weak suffer what they must. So in a certain sense, that has always been the case in terms of our domination of other species. You know, most people do not want to know what goes on inside a slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. So, as you know, if you're interested in animal suffering, animal justice, and you even raise the issue by saying, I'd rather not participate in that, that raises everyone's hackles and they jump on you. And you know, they heap ridicule on that position out of defensiveness, mm-hmm. right? Well, I want to correct that. Both out of a kind of defensiveness around the cognitive dissonance and a kind of deep-seated, ugly prejudice against other beings, mm-hmm. whom we see as our biological inferiors. Mm-hmm. And they're not, actually.
Yes, thank you, John. And so on that note, I would like to talk about the new agenda of the lab flesh, cellular meat, things like that. Can you talk about that, please?
Well, some years ago, I was approached by Karen Davis, a friend of mine who died of just a couple of years ago. Karen was an amazing activist, intellectual, who founded United Poultry Concerns, you know, which talks about the and raises awareness about our exploitation of chickens and other birds in the food industry and other domains of society. And Karen had asked me what I thought about cellular meat, or where you create a kind of biological scaffold and you add nutrients, and through the miracles of genetic engineering, you are able to grow actual flesh in a kind of vat. And, you know, as you say, there's this whole now powerful lobby through its representative, the Good Food Institute, ostensibly a nonprofit, and you have all this entrepreneurial capital from Silicon Valley flowing into this industry. I know it's not going to solve the problem, and I find it really disturbing that so many vegan and animal justice folks have been bamboozled by this. So I and other scholars in the field have a website called cleanmeat-hoax.com, cleanmeat-hoax.com, where we review about 10 or 12 arguments against this technology. I think the biggest problem with it is it's simply a distraction from the main issues. Why do we need this technology? The answer is we don't. But the capitalist entrepreneurs think that they can make money from this.
And I also, in my opinion, see it as a infiltration and co-option of the vegan movement to destroy the authentic vegan movement, which is the animal liberation and justice.
Absolutely. And one of the insidious uses of language that we're seeing in the industry is this obsession with, quote, protein. Forget talking about protein, everybody. First of all, Americans already get too much protein. We actually get more protein than we need. Secondly, you can get more protein from, you know, two slices of whole wheat bread and, you know, half a cup of peanut butter than you can from two slices of bacon and an egg. So we have this very warped view of protein. It's just like a mind game that the high-tech food industry is engaging in.
Yes, thank you, John. I appreciate your critical thinking and sharing the importance of critical thinking. And speaking of that, let's discuss AI.
Yes. Well, yeah, artificial intelligence. It's shaping up to be the most destructive technology ever created, certainly one of the top technologies ever created in terms of its destructiveness to every aspect, every domain of human consciousness and culture and society. It's going to accelerate the extraction of resources from the earth. I mean, so let's first of all look at the social origins of AI. Well, where does this come from? You know, I tell my students it's people present it as though it's the monolith from 2001, A Space Odyssey, like just this thing that got dropped on the earth. And so everyone talks about AI as though it's a consciousness, as though it's a thinking thing, and as though humans created it. Humans did not create AI, actually. It was monopoly capitalist technologists, the most unscrupulous, ruthless, horrible men on the planet, people like Elon Musk, Sam Altman, Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera, et cetera, you know, who have nurtured this in the bosom of capitalism and have now unleashed this on all of us, and not just unleashed it, they're imposing it on all of us. Mm-hmm. They're imposing it on universities. They've corrupted higher education. They've corrupted the media space, the news space, journalism. I could go on and on about the way this technology is, first of all, leading to cognitive de-skilling, the offloading, outsourcing of our own native human intelligence, moral autonomy onto machines. Sam Altman, who said that in the future, basically AI will be a utility and you'll have to buy it from people like Sam Altman. So let's roll this back. First of all, what is a large learning model, language model? So basically, you take all of this human labor, all the products of human labor in terms of ideas, photography, film, everything, and you steal it, and then you monetize it and sell it back to human beings, right? All of the studies show that the more you use AI, the stupider you get. It makes sense. You lose the ability to think as an autonomous human being. We're living in a world that's dominated by wealthy individuals who control all of the means of life on this planet.
Thank you very much, John. We're listening to John Sanbonmatsu, author of The Omnivore's Deception. And John Sanbonmatsu is also a professor of philosophy at WPI in Massachusetts. Thanks again, John, for everything. And again, I'm thrilled with your upcoming speech at New England Veg Fest, Sunday, April 26th, 2 p.m., being held at Worcester State University.
Thanks so much, Marlene. It was a great conversation, and thanks for the work you're doing.
Thank you. And what contact information and sites can you leave for our listeners?
Well, you can contact me at WPI, just my initials, js@wpi.edu, or go to my personal website that has links to my interviews and some of my writings, which is just my name, johnsanbonmatsu.com. You can order The Omnivore's Deception from my press, which is New York University Press.
Thank you. And is there any other information or messages that you'd like to share with our listeners before we close the interview for today?
I don't think so, except to keep tuning in. There have been some wonderful recent programs on your show, and I hope that you can gain a bigger audience even.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John, and thank you so much for joining us on Vegan Nation with this in-studio interview. I'm so thrilled. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. We are ARC, Animal Rights Choir, and this is our song for National Animal Rights Day. Our planet, theirs too.
Am I alone in this? I see the world, it feels so crazy. Doing things to make us sick. Killing the animals, taking their babies. We got a chance.
We got a chance.
Turn it around. It's in our hands.
In our hands.
The time is now to make a stand.
Make a stand.
Some way, somehow.
Much thanks to our listeners for tuning into Vegan Nation and to my guest John Sanbonmatsu, and also to vegan musician Vegan Queen V and ARC, the Animal Rights Choir. I'm your host, Marlena Massachusetts. Please join us again next week at the same time. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. This is Marlena Massachusetts wishing you a lovely, joyous, peaceful day.